Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
John Waters, the controversial and often humorous cult filmmaker, likes to focus on what strikes him as weird things that pass for wholesome in everyday American life. So it's no surprise he's fascinated by Christmas. Take, for instance, the Christmas morning scene from his 1974 comedy Female Trouble. In the film, troubled teen Dawn Davenport, played by the drag queen Divine, breaks into a violent rage, toppling the tree onto her mother.
Dawn! Come see what Santa brought you!
What are they?
Those are your new shoes, Dawn.
Those aren't the right kind. I told you cha-cha heels, black ones.
Nice girls don't wear cha-cha heels.
Give me those presents. I don't need to wear those ugly shoes. I told you the kind I wanted. You ruined my Christmas.
Oh, Merry Christmas. Waters has arguably mellowed a bit since then. These days, he celebrates the season with a live one-man Christmas show, which he's bringing to the Berklee Performance Center in Boston a week from tomorrow. And considering that Waters is alternately called the Prince of Puke and the Pope of Trash, exactly what might a John Waters Christmas consist of?
Well, people puke at Christmas at the office party a lot, and a lot of people get a lot of trash for Christmas they don't like. So I'm here to get you through every ritual. If you love Christmas, if you hate it, if you're traumatized by it, if it drives you to bankruptcy, if you're rich and you love it, or every kind of Christmas you can have. It's really an inspirational talk to get you through the holidays if you're crazy and proud of it.
I think we all need a hand getting through the Christmas holidays.
I agree.
What are your memories? What are your Christmas memories?
Well, I actually love Christmas for no irony in a way. I had a great family, and I have a pretty traditional Christmas. I just do a spin on it. I mean, I don't have a Christmas tree. We decorate the electric chair.
And you're serious. I understand you actually do have a replica of the electric chair in your house
in
Baltimore,
yes,
right?
But yeah. It has books piled on it, so you can't really tell it's an electric chair. But we decorate it for Christmas. It's an old tradition. It's
sure.
John Waters' family values. They're there. They're just a little twisted. I have the Unabomber birdhouse. That's on the mantle. We put some Christmas lights on that. I have a wreath on the door that my sister-in-law does made out of sticker bushes that tears your outfit when you come in. It grabs onto you. And that's how I get through Christmas. But my memories, the first memory I have, which I've exaggerated and put in my films, and is when the Christmas tree fell over on my grandmother when I was young. And it was really exciting. So I have told that story so much that traveling on this Christmas tour other years, many people have shared with me their traumas of the Christmas tree falling over. It's usually the dog or alcoholic parents. But I think you should rig your own Christmas tree and have it fall over. The excitement, it really adds to the drama of Christmas.
Have it fall over on your least favorite uncle, for example.
No, on yourself even. Just have it all rigged. So right at the height of opening the presents, you pull the cord and the Christmas tree falls over and the dog yells. Everybody jumps up and screams and hugs each other, and it's a crazy Christmas.
John Waters, you often walk that fine line between the mainstream and the counterculture. I'm wondering if the story of Christmas appeals to you in this way. For instance, Mary and Joseph as outcasts.
Well,
does this appeal to you?
In some ways, it does. I talk about the living creche that I want to do with Stud Muffin, Joseph, and the three queens instead of the three kings. But I have a little bit of problem of the virgin birth. It's not really. I'm a feminist.
Yeah.
And to be pregnant and told that's good without having sex, I have a problem as a feminist. I'm for all religions if it brings people comfort. I'm just against religions that make me do it. I go to living creches in a Diane Arbus spirit. I personally, if I had a child, wouldn't allow them to be around angry mules and straw and candles at Christmas equals fire to me.
What else about living creches? I mean, what about the people who are in living creches? I mean, how do they make
well,
you feel?
I'm sorry. They look like perverts to me. And I know that's calling the kettle black. But I go to one every year and I pull up and slink in and I don't get out of the car because I'm afraid if people will see me, I really feel like a Christmas pervert at a living creche. But I'm telling you, something about it gives me the creeps. And I know that people are there with their children and it's happy, but it to me, it's very bizarre. And I love to look at it. I go every year in disguise and sort of draw and pull up and hide in my car. I don't get out.
One of my earliest memories of Christmas is being taken to the shopping mall and being placed on the lap of Santa Claus, who, of course, wasn't yes. Santa Claus. He was some man who liked to dress up as Santa Claus. And it always sort of scared me, actually. It kind of gave me the creeps.
Well, yeah, Santa Claus, I talk about that. I mean, in fancy stores, I think they should have a Santa Claus in the Tom Ford store that says, oh, you don't want that, darling, do you, to some child? Or can you be a communist, Stasi Claus, you know, and give children, like, tractors and poor, pitiful Pearl dolls? I'm wondering, there can be a Santa Claus for every kind of audience, and that's what I'm interested in, an S&M Santa Claus.
That would be a nice gift for someone, I'm sure.
Yeah,
I don't
certainly.
Think they're listening to public radio, however. But,
well, oh, sure they
sure
are.
Sure they
are. Kidding?
You're probably right, yeah.
Yeah, the more power people have, the more they're into that.
What about this season of mass consumption of present buying as we emerge from this long, difficult recession?
Well, I think great Christmas presents are not about how much they cost, it's how much thought you put into it. I'm really against gift cards. That means you think the person's stupid and has no interest, and you're too lazy to think of something. I mean, you have to be creative. Take all the worst pictures of your relatives you have and put them on Christmas balls and give them to one of your hipster relatives. There's inventive ways you can spend no money at Christmas and have a good time.
I wanted to ask you just a little bit about your films. I think it's fair to say that they've allowed people to revel in taboo, the outrageous, maybe even stuff that's disgusting. Is that a fair description, too, of the aesthetic that you bring to the one-man show?
Sure. I think I take people into a world that they might not be comfortable in if I wasn't there, but I look up to my world. I don't hate the things I make fun of. I marvel at them. I'm astonished at them. And I think I make you feel safe if you come into the world with me as your guide. And I'm just trying to ask you to not judge other things and try to think of things in a different way once you've seen them, even things that might frighten you or scare you, because human behavior is the most interesting thing of all. I don't understand reality television. Just walk outside.
So you're known for these cult films, Pink Flamingo, Cry Baby, Hairspray, but you haven't made a film since 2004. Have you left filmmaking behind?
Well,
or what's
know.
Going on?
Filmmaking might have left me. My last movie was about sex addicts, and it got an NC-17 rating. I had a lot of problems with that.
Yeah.
And my new movie is a children's Christmas movie called Fruitcake that I'm having trouble getting financed. Who knows? The independent film world's changed a lot. So I wrote a book, and it was a bestseller called Role Models. So I have many ways to tell stories. Each year I'm doing this Christmas tour. It's a way to tell new stories and to meet my audience. I just came back from Australia and New Zealand where I did 25,000 miles. I did 9 lectures of This Filthy World, the other show I have. So I'm always telling stories. I just find the way to tell it.
A lot of your work, John Waters, has been embraced by mainstream culture over the years. Hairspray, for example, became a multi-million dollar Broadway hit, a Hollywood remake. How do you feel about that? Is there a tension between commercial success and losing that edginess that you traditionally embrace?
No tension for me. I bought an apartment in San Francisco from Hairspray the musical. No tension.
It worked
at all.
Out pretty well for you.
Yeah, it was great. I always used to joke, I always wanted to sell out. Nobody bought me. Finally, somebody did. But then my last film was, you know, got a lot of censorship problems. I think I'm doing the same thing I've always done from the very beginning. I think the public has, the sense of humor has changed a lot towards my direction, not because of me, just because of, who knows, of culture itself. So I think my career has been understood. I'm certainly not an outsider anymore. I'm an insider, and I find that even hilariously delightful.
So what counts as weird these days or transgressive these days? I mean, is it possible to truly shock?
Well, I think I never just tried to shock. I tried to make you laugh at your ability to be shocked
right.
by anything. I was astonished recently. I tell you what I think is transgressive. In the high schools now, when Hairspray is done, they can't say a fat girl has to play it or an African-American girl. It has to be open to everybody. So I have seen pictures of Hairspray where a very thin black girl plays Tracy. I find that transgressive. She's a good actress if she can say, why are there no black people on the show? And she is black and sing Big, Blonde, and Beautiful when she weighs 90 pounds. If you can pull that off, you're really a good actress.
I'm interested in asking you, too, about your continued attachment to Baltimore. I was reading an article about you recently, and someone said, strange that he's in his business and doesn't live in New York or Hollywood. Why Baltimore?
Well, Baltimore is where I get all my ideas. If ever I need an idea, I just come here and I go out and I'll find something or I'll see something that inspires me. People say strange things to me. I also have friends here that aren't in show business. Not everybody I know talks about the movie business. I like a life that's away from that because I don't make movies about Hollywood or about rich people. I make movies about regular people that think they're normal but are actually totally insane, and Baltimore is a city filled with that.
You know, I used to live in Washington, D.C., and I would get up to Baltimore every now and then, and I always appreciated the feeling of that city. Maybe in contrast to Washington, Baltimore felt real to me. But then I became hooked on The Wire, and now I feel I really love Baltimore because of the HBO series.
And I love The Wire, too.
Right? It's a great
series.
It's
the best show. Yeah. On television. But, you know, all the politicians here hate it and worry that it makes Baltimore look bad. No, it doesn't. It makes Baltimore look edgy and smart, and a great show is inspired by life here. So I think all the people that make movies or TV about Baltimore concentrate on the extremes and the eccentrics of Baltimore. The back streets and the weirdness and the neighborhoods of Baltimore are always what have inspired people.
Mm. So you're, I understand you're a big fan, too, of our great state of Massachusetts, and you spend time in Provincetown, right?
Oh, man. This will be, I think, my 48th summer coming up. Yes, when I was young, I ran the Provincetown bookshop there. I've written most of my movies, many of my books there, and I'm on my bicycle every day there. Yes, I love Provincetown. Mm. It is truly a gay fishing village.
Can you tell us a good sort of Provincetown story in this Christmas season?
That I can get on the air. I have a lot of stories in my Christmas show about Bear Week, but I don't know how much I can pull off on the air about that. I mean, the bears, you know, they're very large gay men that look for cubs, who are younger versions. They look for otters, people that aren't fat or hairy yet, and they say, this is my significant otter. I love the vocabulary, actually.
I see. Interesting. Well, John Waters, what a pleasure talking to you, and thank you very, very much for coming in. We appreciate
it. Well, thank you. And come see the show. I think you'll have a merry, merry Christmas.
Well, the show is A John Waters Christmas, and it'll be at the Berkeley Performance Center Saturday, December 10th. A quick update and a few more details on a story we've been covering today. As we reported, Attorney General Martha Coakley has filed suit against several banks, including Bank of America, Wells Fargo, JP Morgan, Chase & Company, and GMAC. The suit accuses them of a variety of offenses, including illegally seizing properties, filing fraudulent foreclosure documents, and not doing enough to help struggling borrowers stay in their home. Well, this afternoon, GMAC Mortgage of Ally Financial says it's pulling out of most of its mortgage loan business in Massachusetts. GMAC is the nation's fifth largest mortgage company, and it says it's taking this action because recent developments have led mortgage lending in Massachusetts to be no longer viable. The move ratchets up the showdown with Attorney General Coakley, but GMAC says it will honor all existing commitments made with its lenders. And Monday on Radio Boston, you know her as Kelly Kapoor on The Office.
I talk a lot, so I've learned to just tune myself out.
Comedian, writer, and Cambridge native Mindy Kaling is live in our studio. That's Monday on Radio Boston.
Oh my God, 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 oh my God.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at Boston.com. Our show is produced by Adam Ragusa, Jessica Alpert, Dan Mosey, and Jason Breslow. Our interns are Gautier Giacomoni and Julia Lasagne. Tim Skog is our technical director. The executive producer of Radio Boston is Mark Navin. I'm Anthony Brooks. Magna will be back on Monday. Have a great weekend and join us then for more Radio Boston.